Welcome to today's episode, where this April 5th, we are here discussing A Gentleman in Moscow, the new British series starring Ewan McGregor on Showtime and Paramount Plus about the life of Count Alexander Rostov, an aristocrat who finds himself under house arrest in Metropole, in the Metropole, a grand hotel across the street from the Kremlin, following the first years after the Russian Revolution. Now, this type of story has been done plenty of times before. It's where a person finds themselves in a less than ideal situation. And I have a couple connections or comparisons that I want to make. First is The Terminal, which starred Tom Hanks. The main character, I think, was based off Mehran Karimi Nasiri. I did have to look up his name. And that was about the guy who got stuck there and could not leave the airport without getting arrested, right? And then A Little Princess, which was a movie in 1995 by Alfonso Cuarón, really famous director, where this little kid gets stuck in an orphanage because I think her father dies, and then she's like made to live in the attic because there's no money to keep her there, right. And there's this really mean landlady, and so that's sort of a similar situation. Shawshank, the prison story, where he goes to prison and he's stuck there and he has to make the most of his life and he does the best he can.
But all those things that you're mentioning when you're talking about an airport, an attic, and also what was the last one, Shawshank, a jail cell, those are all not a hotel. A hotel seems like that would be a place that you would want to stay.
Well, how about this one? In the last podcast we did, which was We Were the Lucky Ones, starring Joey King and also Logan Lerman, right? Logan Lerman's character, Addy, was stuck on a cruise ship. He was stuck on a cruise ship. It was a luxury cruise ship where he got to play the piano all the time, but they were in Nazi-occupied territory, so he was constantly in fear for his life. He could not leave that cruise ship until he was kicked off. That seemed kind of similar to this situation. And also Three Body Problem, if you remember in that political thriller, I guess, back in time in the, 60s, 70s, when China was having its own revolution of sorts, and they were killing off the intellectuals, well, there was one that was they needed, so they took her and they stuck her in this like encampment to do tests on like scientific experiments and stuff. But they told her, you will never leave this place alive and you are stuck here. And that also reminded me of this. So we are very familiar with the idea of A Gentleman in Moscow.
But out of all the ones that you just mentioned, including A Gentleman in Moscow, which one would you want to be stuck in?
Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, probably The Terminal, because that one has the least the worst thing that could happen is he goes to jail. And in fact, they were pushing him to leave so that he could just get out of their hair.
With Amor Towles, he was in the investigative field for 20 years. And in 2009, he went to this Russian hotel and he realized how just luxurious it was. He really enjoyed it. And he was like, this is so big. What if a character was stuck here? And then he was like, you know what? I'm going to try and make this into a book. But if the character is going to be stuck in this hotel, it can't be by choice. It has to be. And he automatically thought of Russia them because he was like, house arrest has been a thing for centuries, therefore I'm going to place this in Russia. And he seems, from the three books he's written, this included, to always be someone who likes historical fiction.
I'm shocked that you're not telling me right now that this was based off a true story. That's what I fully expected. I thought this was a real guy. It's clearly based off a lot of real people because he has interactions with a lot of them. In fact, I think in his memories, he's either looking at his sister. I know he's looking at his sister at some points, Helena, but he's also looking at what I think is Anastasia and I think is Rasputin. However, when I went to the little Amazon Prime, like where you could see the cast, no one was cast in those characters. But the reason why I'm so sure is because their dog, I looked up Anastasia, whether or not she had a dog, and it's the same exact type of dog that he's seen in his past memories.
Yes. So from what I understand, the count was fiction, but the hotel that he's staying at, the Metropole, is an actual place. I think it goes by a little bit of a different name, but it's supposed to be a lot like the Plaza in New York or the Ritz in Paris, because when these buildings were being made around that time, as Amor Towles put it, they were almost like siblings in essence because of how big they were supposed to be and how great they were supposed to be as
hotels.
And
I know that they didn't shoot there. Because obviously with Russia and politically, government
this
would not allow that.
Kind of a crazy history because back in 2018, Kenneth Branagh was actually supposed to be playing the main role.
No way.
And they were actually going to get someone who's directed some Peaky Blinders episodes and Misfit episodes.
Is it because they could use the same mustache for his other role?
Well, actually, it's funny you say that because Ian McGregor's mustache is real. Ewan McGregor. It's real. Completely real. His perm is real. They even dyed it. He hated wearing fake ones, so he grew it out for a year and a half. And it's funny because he grew it out for longer than he wanted to because of the writer's strike. Because this actually...
This was filmed after the writer's strike.
Well, they filmed some of it after the writer's strike. I believe like the very ending of the series.
The guy is not afraid to shave his head too for a role. Because I know he's done a ton of different things. Like everything I see him in, he has a different haircut. In fact, that gets into my first positive point. But I do want to continue on my comparisons. This is a period piece. And it reminded me tonally a lot of A Young Doctor's Notebook. Took place during the same time period. Starred, what was his face? Daniel Radcliffe and also John Hamm. And Russian Civil War in the secluded area in the winter. I think he was running a hospital at the time. It also reminds me a little bit of The Nick, which was the beginning of the 20th century. However, it was in America. Clive Owen looks a lot. His Dr. Thackeray looks a lot like the main character here, the Count. And then I also wanted to relate the Count as if he was Tom from Succession. Tom from Succession is an interesting character because, yes, he's morally ambiguous. So you have to take him and make him 90% more morally acceptable and ethical and empathetic. But the way that he does his mannerisms, how he can taste foods and he does those wine tastings and stuff throughout the show.
Sarcastic, I assume?
No, not sarcastic as much as just very, like, he doesn't want... Remember, I think Tom even said in Succession that he doesn't want a job, that he's too used to the environment of being the upper class. And that's very similar to the Count here. But I will give credit now to Ewan McGregor. My first pro of the show is that he is a faceless man, like one of those characters from Game of Thrones. The guy is a chameleon. He does a transformative performance. And when I saw his name attached to this thing after I had started watching it, I couldn't believe it was the same guy. He's played a heroin addict in Trainspotting. He's played a singing candlestick. He's played a guy with a lightsaber. He's
Kenobi, yeah.
Yeah, number one Jedi. Christopher Robin. Recently, and then he also has that international motorcycle series, and I think he plays the French horn. So if he ever made a dating profile, I know he's married to one of the people.
Yeah, he's literally married to Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
He worked with her in 2017 on Fargo.
Fargo season 3.
But they weren't together at that point. He was married to someone else.
Well, it actually even wasn't the first thing that they worked together on. That was one of my games, which I guess you already know. Birds of Prey, they also worked together on. I didn't know either of them were in that film. And also the Star Wars universe, obviously we just mentioned Kenobi.
Oh, of course. Yep.
But then Mary Elizabeth Winstead in Ahsoka as well, who she turned to. She turned to Ewan McGregor and was like, what should I do for this role when she got it?
I'm just saying, like, Ewan McGregor, he embraces this role, but you cannot tell it's him. It just seems like a different guy. It's like when I first started seeing Dan Stevens pop up in a bunch of stuff and I never recognized him. These people are like the opposite of Benedict Cumberbatch or Jeff Goldblum, Nicolas Cage, Angelina Jolie, where you see them in any role and you immediately are taken out of the film because you're like, oh, that's who that is.
I get that a lot with Tom Cruise. I wanted to know, just going with some of the comparisons, what about A Grand Budapest Hotel? I know tonally that would be different, but I was thinking the hotel.
You don't think Wes Anderson fits in with this at all? That would be a very interesting
I saw movie. Some people say that they wish that this was a movie that was directed by Wes Anderson, but given how, like, I guess politically charged the book is, and also just with him being kind of housebound, and it's supposed to be a drama, right? I don't think
Absolutely.
It would maybe work.
At the end of the episode has his friend getting shot in the head. So yes, it's a drama.
Yeah,
there is some comedy in there, but I think the first episode's title, A Master of Circumstance, is actually perfect with the Ewan McGregor symbolism that I was just talking about, because he is a chameleon in this role as well. He's not like going in there and trying to pretend to be someone else, but he is able to adapt to the circumstances he's been put in. Like, he's literally in a closed off box and they keep on trying to make that box more and more shut off from the rest of the world until he breaks, and he's just refusing to do so. So he comes back to Russia. We're not exactly sure why. And he gets in front of this tribunal because he is this aristocrat.
Right.
And
yeah.
Russian's all about, like, at this point, killing off all the monarchy. And so it's 1921-1922, and the Count is sentenced to spend the rest of his days inside the hotel. The reason he's not killed immediately is because he wrote this poem in 1913, which apparently became very popular and actually helped the revolution a bit. And so a lot of people have a kind opinion of him and say, you can live out your days here, kind of just stuck in your own little attic.
Also, would it be something where it's like, if they were to get rid of him, maybe people would notice suddenly?
Nope. I think they could probably kill him off and no one would care that much. But rather than despair, Rostov chooses chooses to embrace his new circumstances with grace, wit, and a positive spirit. So this is where I'm going to talk about how the show surpassed my expectations, because overall, I really enjoyed it. Okay. The director of this first episode, right?
Yes.
Sam Miller.
Sam
I saw his name. And I was like, have we seen anything he's done before? And two things that popped out were Surface and Black Mirror Locke Henry. Both I disliked heavily. Surface has memory scenes in it. That's part of the reason I hated the show so much, but the writers weren't the same. It's not like he wrote those episodes. So
right.
This is showing that director Sam Miller is actually quite good at his job, because he does the montages here, day 1 through 60-something, where Ewan McGregor's character, the Count, is stuck having to live in this attic with barely any of his supplies. He blows out the candle each day. He's got these memories, which are like not shown to us in really short and sweet 4x4 manner, not a lot of dialogue, but they're like so relevant, because you can see his house burning down in one, you see a duel gone wrong in one, and so it's like an instant
duel gone wrong.
Yes, like you see the person, I think it's his memory of him taking a gun and then like shooting someone and then riding off while his like sister or some woman is like screaming.
Oh, so he kills someone. Okay.
And at one point he's connecting with this girl who's also at the hotel, and he tells her that he's never been to a duel, so we don't know if he's lying or if this is some other version of the truth. The classical music on top of it is also pretty good. So director wise, I think it gets a huge pass. It's also super easy to root for this main character. Seems like a good dude. He's mentally resilient towards anything that they're doing towards him. They literally, like a prison, have these guards coming in at any time of day, just breaking his stuff and trying to look for anything he might have stolen. And he's just reading his book the entire time.
He doesn't care at all.
And then they cast the main villain bad guy, who's the guy who's always saying, hey, I'm going to shoot you if you walk out these doors. And then at the end, when they shoot his friend, he even threatens him. He's like, why was your friend trying to get two sets of documents? You know, that type of deal.
Yeah.
And that guy was from Great Expectations, Johnny Harris.
Right. Yeah.
He played the benefactor.
The thing about the show is, it seems like Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and then obviously Ewan McGregor, but also Amor Towles, again, the guy who wrote the book, mm-hmm. and then even the creator, Ben Vanstone, they have been the only ones to do interviews for the show. I tried to look up any facts about any of the other actors, because there's a lot of them as listed in the Wikipedia, and it doesn't seem like they have really promoted the show at all. However, it seems like Showtime has done its due diligence in trying to get the first episode to as many people as possible. It's available right now for free on YouTube, Sling TV, Amazon Prime.
I think Showtime always does that, though. Like, I don't think that's dependent upon this show.
It was just crazy how many places it's available right now. You're not going to have trouble trying to
find it. It's only 43 minutes. If you haven't seen it, go watch it before we really, really ruin it. Right now, I'm going to get into the dialogue of the show and why I think that's its biggest pro, because it shows rather than tells, but yet the dialogue is representing something that it's telling. So let me get into it. In the tribunal, the first thing that he says is, it's not in the business of gentlemen to have an occupation, because they were asking what his service that he could provide to the Russians at that point.
Right.
And it's also to show that he's not going to be intimidated, even in where he is at that point. They took his cane away from him, that like fancy cane that all aristocrats would have. They grabbed that away from him. He's literally just seen a man being dragged by his heels across the hallway, and yet he's sitting up there and he's just like, yep, I'm here. I love this country.
The more I hear of it, the more it seems like Kenneth Branagh, because this was back in 2018 when he was cast. This was fresh
Absolutely.
Off of Murder on the Orient Express. His character in that, Henry Perot, it seems like is almost exactly the same as Ewan McGregor in here.
Yeah, you could take that. And then moving forward in the episode, he's brought to the hotel, and this is where he, the first night, goes to the dinner area to enjoy the banquet of food for everybody is getting. However, Russia, 1921, there was a lot of shortages going on.
Yes.
They had just had a revolution, so there wasn't a lot of food available. However, a lot of the chefs that were around were used to the old like monarchy coming in, who have a very defined palate. And so they were overjoyed to see that their excellency has returned. And when they bring him his food, he immediately tells that the saltim baka, which I've never heard of before, it must be a Russian dish, was being served with chicken instead of veal, shaved Ukrainian ham instead of prosciutto, and nettle instead of sage. And he gets a round of applause from the chef. But it did remind me of the bear, because in the back of the room, everybody's calling him chef, and it's very strict, and it's just, it shows out over 100 years, things don't really change that much in the kitchen. Okay. And then so he attends this dinner in the open, which is also significant because he's showing that he's not going to be shamed by having to take a lower room and why he's not just going to hide away forever and ever and ever. The staff bafflement of seeing him there only takes a few minutes. At first, they're like, what's he doing? And then they're like, he's refusing to be beaten. However, some of the staff later on in the episode are clearly more prone to helping the Bolshevik, like revolution part of the atmosphere. They're there as spies. They really, really dislike that he's just attending these things for free and that he's not paying for his stuff. And so he even gets lambasted by the manager of the hotel, however, begrudgingly, because the manager is one of his friends, and the manager warns him. He's like, everything, the only reason this place is even allowed to exist is because they want to see who's friendly to the Russian environment. So you should not be making any other plans. And that is what shies him away from escaping with his friend Nikolai, the prince, who was still being hired to like play music.
It's strange that people would be mad at him for not paying anything. I mean, he's literally being forced to live there.
I think it's more just allowing him to exist. I think that they would rather just see him dead.
Wow.
You know? Yeah, so I think the message was clear. The bad guy even says it. Life for you and your kind is over for you in Moscow. And then in the second half of the episode, that's where we get a bit of hope because he does meet Nina, who's this precocious girl whose father is hinted at being one of the higher-ups in the government. However, her mom has passed away. She kind of reminds me of Scout from To Kill a Mockingbird because her mom's passed away and she's just like so curious and stuff. And they do end up bonding over dead parents, but also just she's really curious about how princesses were in the past. He knows of a lot of princesses. He's telling her about how Nikolai used to be a prince.
So she's like 11, I assume.
Yeah, she is. She's like 11 and she has a skeleton key. So she's able to take him around all the hotel, which he was aware of some rooms. He even had a secret little stash of coins in one of his desks that he was able to bring with him.
It sounds like it's Deus Ex Machina, the fact that she has this
right?
coin.
Yeah, probably my main negative was that no one would have been spying on him at the time that she was taking him around, because she takes him to the bottom guts of the place where you can see the servants still working and feeding their kids. And then she takes him near another door where he literally stares at it for a while, thinking whether or not he should try to make a run for it. But again, he's like 200 miles away from Minsk in Belarus, so he never would escape. And so by the end of the episode, he's even telling his friend Nikolai, he's like, man, I've seen your name on a sheet of paper and I know that they're coming after you. You got to get out of here soon. And he's like, right after I played this last song. And so he's playing the last
song. Why is he playing the last song?
I mean, he sort of has to. He's there with the rest of the band. And so they grab his violin in the middle of it, bash it, and then they drag him outside and shoot him in the head. And that's where...
And the second half is supposed to be more optimistic?
Well, we do get a lot of conversation between Nikolai and the Count, because he kind of gives us the reason why the Count is there. It partly has to do with the fact that he wants to get his grandmother safely on a ship to England, but also about Helena, which is not to be confused with Helena from Joey King's performance. And it was weird to see two in a row where we have two Helenas, but we don't actually see Helena. I was wondering if maybe that was who Mary Elizabeth Winstead is going to end up playing. She doesn't appear in the first episode, but
Anna. Who I have Mary Elizabeth playing. So she doesn't show up in the first episode.
Not at all.
Oh, I'm disappointed to hear that, because what happened was Ewan McGregor, after Kenneth Branagh dropped out, I think it was around 2021, he had lunch with one of the executive producers, read a very, very early first draft of the first episode, decided to take it. Then he read the book. And after reading the book, he recommended it to his wife. The wife read the book. And then she said, oh, I actually really am interested in playing Anna. And then, of course, when the executive producers heard that, they called it a total dream. They were so happy about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the episode worked really well, focused on one character. And ultimately, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I didn't know that Alexander was, or Sasha, was short for Alexander. That was the first time I'd heard that.
I looked
up Sacha Baron Cohen to wonder if his actual name's Alexander, and it's not. But yeah, he seems like a really cool guy worth learning about. So he's stuck in this weird limbo, this purgatory. And now that I know it's not true, they can do whatever they want with him, can't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a 6.6 on IMDb, but Ewan McGregor's performance has been highlighted as being the best thing about the series. They say he's a great person to be able to follow, 91%. That's even stated in the consensus for Rotten Tomatoes. But then also you have some people like Variety, though complimenting McGregor's performance, also saying that it would be a great 2-hour feature for a book club that they could take to Saturday matinee. And this one is a show that passed jazz itself out rather than cultivating its ensemble with more substantive issues. And it doesn't really seem like, from what you're talking about, really, because the book is supposed to be very political. It's supposed to have a lot of stuff in it that, like, around that time.
They're like approaching all the issues, though, tangentially from him. And so, like, I think it's more about his, like, perseverance throughout this entire thing. It is cool. Like, he gets this new room with the servants' quarters, and he immediately turns on the faucet of water to try cooking some water. And all this dirty water comes out. Reminds me a lot of his scene from Trainspotting. He's just about to jump in there and start swimming around. No, but he waits for it to clear up, which is very symbolic, and then he just uses that water. So he's not going to get stifled by bullies. One of the reasons was, he gives this allegory to Nikolai, where he's like, how do you do it? How are you not depressed at this point? And he's like, if I'm depressed, then I would get super depressed. And also, this happened to me when I lost a game of Drought or checkers, I think is what it was, back in his like younger years, where he lost and then he got so mad he threw the whole piece up, and it was this bully guy that he lost to. And then his grandma calls him up and says, why did you give that bully the satisfaction? Mm-hmm. And so I know that's a little preachy, but at the same time, the message felt like it fit clearly into this, almost like in Game of Thrones when Tyrion and Jaime were having those conversations that meant so much, even though they were about so little.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because the creator for this, Ben Vanstone, he's actually worked on a lot of PBS shows, but also fantasy shows. He's written for The Last Kingdom, Merlin, EastEnders. And so I was interested to see how that corresponded with something like this.
I mean, I've given it all the connections and comparisons that I could think of. If you like historical period pieces, you will definitely enjoy this. But even if you don't, I think that the first episode provides enough of a really interesting premise that people should jump aboard it.
It's going to be 8 episodes. It's a mini series. One of the few scenes that I did see of the show was when he was in a barber shop, and it seems
he's in the barber shop a couple times. First time, the barber is very happy to see him. He's like, oh my gosh, Your Excellency, I can't wait to actually, I have this first person in front of you, which is very different than the dynamic that was between the two of them before. But just like the Count has learned to do, he's like, oh, absolutely, to take care of that person first. However, the next time he goes in, he had an appointment, and then this other guy was waiting, and the other guy, seeing the Count get superior treatment to him, that's what causes the manager.
Oh, so that's what actually, yeah, because I was wondering, he was acting very hostile towards him, and it was not played for laughs, it seemed like.
No, because then the guy takes a pair of scissors, and he grabs him, and he sticks him up to his mustache. I know that sounds ridiculous. Yeah. He does cut a little bit of his mustache, but I think it's more to just show that this guy does not respect him in the same way. And even one of the waiters is also kind of an asshole in the same manner. Anything else that we have to talk about in this series?
No, that's all I have.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in the next episode. Hope you enjoyed this one. Bye.
Bye.